There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 970. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday. If you celebrate Thanksgiving, maybe you don't. Maybe you're not even listening in America. Or maybe you're leading the charge to bring American Thanksgiving to Finland. Yes, that's what you're doing. Or even if you're not, I hope you had a great weekend. If you want your event on the ID10T Community Corkboard, that is a very simple remedy. Just email events@ID10T.com so we can help promote a thing that you care about, like Ange Steph, who writes, Ange, A-N-G-E, did I say that right? If I didn't, I apologize. I am forever in your debt for mispronouncing your name. Or we're square because I said it right. Ange? So Ange writes, I just want to say thanks to you, my best mate and I did a thing. All right, I can't take credit for that. You and your mate did that, so good on you. We started our own podcast called Nerdizens. We publish monthly. We talk about movies, TV. We have some awesome fun facts and scary stories. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Just want to say thanks for inspiring us. Well, thank you for making that thing. Bob and Mark write, we're Bob and Mark, and our band's called Bark. Oh my God, you have to start your shows like that, or that has to be in a song, because it's just too metrically perfect. And it rhymes, Marge, and you know it rhymes. We make kids' music that doesn't suck and released our first full-length album on vinyl last year entitled The Bark Album. And following the news of the devastating Hill and Woolsey fires, we decided to donate 100% of all our album sales to the LA United Way's Disaster Relief Fund in partnership with the United Way of Ventura County. This fund will support low-income residents of SoCal whose lives and livelihoods have been affected by the current wildfires. So turn your kiddos on to some great new music and do some good at the same time. Visit thisisbark.com. That actually coincidentally plays into some of the conversation that happens with today's guest, who's Chris Coy. Chris is just a phenomenal actor, and you might recognize him from The Walking Dead. A few seasons ago, he played a character named Martin, who was a resident of Terminus, and he basically threatened Judith to, in front of Tyrese, to try to save his own hide, and that didn't go too well for Martin. Martin was not a nice guy, but Chris Coy is an exceptionally nice guy, it turns out, and he's in a bunch of really great stuff. He's in The Front Runner, which is the movie about Gary Hart, directed by Jason Reitman, that Hugh Jackman is in. He's also in The Deuce on HBO. He was also in Castle Rock, which is on Hulu, which was great, and he's a guy that I'm sure you recognize his face, even if you don't know his name, and you will get to know his name, because he is on the rise. This young fella's going places. And I think after you get to know him a little bit on the podcast and see what an incredibly compassionate individual he is, and how thoughtful he is. And Chris, as I was saying about the Bob and Mark, corkboard thing, is a resident of Thousand Oaks, and this was recorded a couple of weeks ago. They had suffered multiple tragedies in Thousand Oaks between the horrendous shooting that happened there, and then also then the fires broke out, and that was all in his neighborhood. And so, just a heads up, we do talk a little bit about that in the beginning, and then move on to some other stuff. But Chris is really, really just a solid, solid family guy. And, it was really sweet to have him on. And coincidentally, it turns out he and my wife had worked on a project together a while back, and I didn't know that. And so, spoiler alert, there's a sweet little reunion in the middle of the podcast when Lydia walks by to say that she's leaving to go to work.
So here's the ID10T podcast number 970 with your new favorite person, Chris Coy.
Also, happy Finnish Thanksgiving.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
No, you're fine.
It's fine.
It's kind of crazy getting out of Thousand Oaks.
Is that where you live?
Yeah. We just got back from that yesterday.
So you were allowed to go back now?
Yeah, they evacuated. The fire started in my backyard. The hill fire did.
Jesus.
The same morning that we woke up and found out about the mass shooting.
Right.
We're not on. I don't want to be bleak on the interview, are we?
Oh, no. Actually, okay. We are, but we should talk about it because it's... Because you have – it happened in your backyard and you – first of all, it's so sweet that you would apologize for being 10 minutes late having come from basically a war zone.
It feels that way. Yeah. Very much so.
Okay. So that Thursday morning, you found out about the shooting and the fire at the same time.
I wake up, find out about the shooting at a place that my wife and I have been several times. It's less than 4 miles down the road from my house. And we end up finding out that we know some people that were there. And then we find out that we have friends of friends who unfortunately lost a child.
Oh, God.
And, you know, it'd be tragic no matter where it took place. But something about it being so close makes it so surreal and really... brings home the idea that like it could happen to anybody. Like it could be
anytime,
you.
Like anywhere. That. You just don't know. You just it's like you go about your routine.
That's right.
So many of these stories start with like it was a normal day.
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly.
And then all of a sudden everything changed.
Right. My cousin who lives down the street, he's lived in Thousand Oaks for 30 years. All three of his girls that are now college age and older frequented Wednesday night at Borderline, the honky tonk night. Like that was their thing. And he was kind of, you know, luckily none of them were there that night. It floored him. And so, yeah, we wake up, find out about that. I've got all these texts like, are you okay? Were you guys out last night? Anything like that? And we're like, what are you talking about? We turn on the news. We find out. And we're all sort of sitting in that and talking to our friends who were even closer to it than us. And then I get a call. My wife and I were out with the kids. And we get a call from my neighbor. The backyard's on fire. And I'm like, what? And we live in a canyon above a wildlife preserve called Wildwood. And he's like, Wildwood's on fire. And so I fly home. The whole way home, the closer I get, the more it's like, that's my house. And then luckily we get there and it's not. But we can see the flames from the backyard. And it was just like, put the kids and the dogs in the car and then grab whatever you want, baby. Because if the winds go this way, we're done. And, you know, it's 50-50.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, you know, Los Angeles, every area kind of has their natural disaster to contend with.
Yeah.
But, you know, in Southern California or in California, we have earthquakes, fires, mudslides, and we talk a lot about earthquake preparedness, but it seems like in the last few years, we also need to be talking about wildfire preparedness.
Yeah, right.
Because what do you take, like, what do you... I mean, I think you just grab photos, you grab, you know, your wedding ring.
That's
you grab,
right, exactly.
Anything that you can't replace
right.
that's portable.
Right.
And then I guess you just have to go, well, I don't know, whatever happens, happens now. What do I do?
That's right. And that's why I said, it was like, we should do this right now because once the panic sets in, we're going to just like aimlessly be walking in circles through this house. What I realized was even though we had time and we weren't panicked, we both still were like, wait, what do we grab? Like,
right.
The digital age helps a bit because I just sort of instinctively, and I think like, you know, growing up in a generation before the digital age, wanted to grab photos off the walls. And I was like grabbing them, and I was like, wait, I just printed this out off my phone. Like,
yeah. But wait, my ALF VHS tapes.
Yeah, like, no, but no, I did grab the VHS tapes.
Well, we're in Griffith Park here, and we've been through a couple fires here, and there is that, and, you know, we've been fortunate that we haven't had to evacuate, but we have... There have been a couple that were close enough where you could see the flames,
right?
And we just said, okay, get the cat,
right?
And we just sort of are in that, like, ready to pounce.
Yeah,
mode.
You're in like a holding pattern.
Yeah, you're just in a holding pattern, just wait exactly what you said, just waiting to see where the wind blows, and it is difficult because we live most of our lives really building these kind of certainty bubbles where we think like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. Like, we live in a good area. Like, we live in a safe this. We have this, you know. And then something like that happens, and you're like, yeah, everything's temporary. Nothing is certain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know.
Especially, we had just, back to the shooting, my whole town was celebrating that, like, a couple months ago, we got named the third safest city in the country. And it's like... And like you said, we all allowed that to, like, settle in our minds as though that was a certainty.
Right.
Or, like, a constant.
Right.
And that just imploded. And while it's imploding, everything catches on fire. And then that goes the other way. But then an ember lands over here. And now it's coming towards us from this side.
Right.
It was, like, just...
Yeah, I mean, I don't, as upsetting as it all is, I certainly don't think... The answer is to be afraid of everything. I think the answer is just to sort of say, like, well, you know, appreciate each day that you have.
Yeah.
And
the treasures that you have while you have them.
That's exactly right. And also, you know, realizing what's important.
What matters.
A car is not important. Things are not important.
Right.
People are important.
Right.
And, you know,
yep.
those things that are special to us. If your kid did a drawing, you'd want to save that.
That's exactly right. Know? That's what we grabbed. We, like, opened up the 300-year-old cabinet and take out the 5-day-old cartoon drawings. And we're like, this is what matters. Leave the antiques.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's true, too, is it kind of, in a certain way, was, like, exhilarating, not to make light of it, because I spent all day yesterday searching and salvaging through a buddy's house who burned to the ground.
Right.
And, you know, certainly tragic. He had a great attitude about it. But, like, what we realized in kind of looking around the house and being like, what do we grab, was that, like, there's not too much. Like, we could lose everything here. And if we had each other and these kids and those two dogs that drive us crazy every day, we would be happy still. You know, we would rebuild or go somewhere else and we would gather new treasures. And my buddy who really, I mean, out of nowhere, his house caught fire. There was no warning whatsoever. It was kind of right when Woolsey fire started. And he essentially lost every treasure in that house. And yesterday, searching through it, he was like, truth is, I feel like it was a forced purge.
Mm-hmm.
I've been collecting shit for 30 years and I get to start over now. Like, you know, and I kind of felt that way too, even though we got lucky and made it out unscathed. It was like, dude, if we start from zero again, okay, we start from zero.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really more about the acquisition of things than the things.
You know exactly.
I mean? It's like, oh,
it's the hunt.
We traveled and we bought this thing in Europe and we brought it back. You know, it's like, it was the trip to Europe and the acquisition.
The memory itself of doing so. And like,
Things. I mean, you know, you see, we have things in our house, but they're all just sort of like, I don't know, like medals that, you know, like,
that's right.
I went to Austria once you know, but even now it's like I mean, it sounds like you like antiques too. I like everything that has anything that has a story.
Stories, man.
But so much of the stuff we buy online now, so it's not even like we're really hunting and gathering anymore. It's like, oh, you can buy, you know, 200-year-old antiques on a website.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I think we are powered and driven by the stories that we are able to sort of tell ourselves. And if the story is that, you know, it's really just the continuation of the journey and this is a new journey, again, like you said, not to make light of it, but, you know, at least it's not – at least you're not going to be sort of a prisoner of your things.
Yeah, right.
You know?
And that story's still intact.
Yes.
And then even more so, again, my buddy's place yesterday, he was like – some of these things that I lost, like, the story only gets amplified now. Like,
right.
I went and found this thing, and I've had it for 30 years, and then it burned up in this fire.
Right.
He found, and then, like, little things that we did find partially intact. He was like, this was at the bottom of the pile sentimentally 5 days ago.
Right.
And now I'm going to frame this, and it'll be in my house forever.
Right.
And then it was just like a...
How old are your kids?
6 and 3.
And how are you explaining, I mean, how are you explaining all of this to them, to a 6-year-old, particularly, they're just starting to figure out that the world can be a scary place.
True.
So how are you...
She's very much like, yeah, she's like awake now. She sees it all, and she's got so many questions, and most of which I have no answers to. So you just make shit up. You just make...
Yeah, blue.
Yeah, exactly. The fire... to be honest with you, both of them... it's all a great adventure still. Like, they're way more excited than scared.
The fire's
coming, and watching TV, and it's the first time in my 6-year-old's life she's ever been interested in the news. The 3-year-old was still like, can we put Looney Tunes back on? The 6-year-old was glued to the TV with me and her mother, and like, is the house going to burn down? I don't know, baby. And like, what would we do if it did? We would find another house. We would go somewhere else. We would go to friend's house. It would be okay. And like, I could see a little bit of like I said, more excitement in her eyes than fear, which like I can relate to that too. I think to some degree, maybe it's all of us, but to some degree, there's like a sick excitement or like in the anticipation of like, is this going to go wrong? And if so, what will I have to do?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that in my 6-year-old. Just like, okay, daddy, like, well, let's go. And that's like, I'm proud of her for being so fearless. But it's also a little bit of like, you know, like you said, how do you explain that to them? You do so gently and with care. And maybe not with 100% transparency.
Right. Yeah. Right, right, right. Because yeah. Their tiny minds still... It's like I would imagine you would want to be honest, open with them and authentic with them. But there's still a lot of stuff they're not...
That's right.
..quite able to process.
Yeah, you don't need to fully open
the curtains. No.
Yeah.
But it does, in one sense, it really does make you understand certain philosophies or ways of life or religions where people are like, don't, you know... And I guess it's not even like don't have any possessions, but just don't be a prisoner of your possessions.
It's true, man.
I don't know. Well, I'm glad you're okay.
Oh, thanks,
and,
man.
And
you're so right too. We've been like hugging each other harder and just like loving a little deeper since it all went down.
And hopefully, you know, you remember that, and that in and then in like a week or two, you're like, oh, goddamn traffic, what is this? You know?
Yeah, or today on the way here, yeah. I'm like calling you like, traffic. I'm sorry, man.
Traffic. This does not have 12 items. This is the express line. Piece of shit. You know, yeah, you're like, all right, maybe that's not.
Exactly. It's right. Maybe
that's like, yeah, right. I mean, the guy's 13 items. It's not the biggest deal.
All these looky-loos looking at the fire smoke. It's like, well, it's the biggest plume of smoke.
I do often, you know, sort of have these conversations of like, oh, it's... Is this the worst time and, you know, is this the most deadly time in history? And then, you know, historically, like, no, there have been deadlier times in history.
Right,
you know, like, we're living longer now. Like, there are really good... But we're so aware of everything.
True. And because of... Yeah, like, you were talking about social media. Now we all just have, like, an up-close view in our pocket at all times. You can always pull that... I could right now go on Instagram and hashtag WoolseyFire and pull up thousands
of up-close
videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which, like... It's never been the case. It's never been that readily available.
Well, this all just sort of proves my theory that people who play dicks in television and film tend to be the nicest people.
Here, here.
So people, right? I mean, Walking Dead fans probably remember that you were you played Martin. You almost took out who ultimately is like kind of one of the main protagonists of the series now, all of a sudden, that you basically threatened to kill a baby in Walking Dead.
To this day, in the grocery store with my kids, people will run up and be like, you're the baby choker. And I'll put my hat on my daughter and be like, no, she is. Attack her. Like, I can't wear a baseball cap or I become like a cannibalistic baby choker.
No, that's right. There was that
like
whole
I'm
element.
A cannibal And, like, it gets darker and worse, too, because that scene was me and Tyrese, who Chad's, like, a dear friend. But, yeah. like, they'll be like, you're the racist baby-choking cannibal. I'll be like, these are my kids right
They're
next
right
to me.
They're right here.
They're right here.
Just, yeah.
And we're in the frozen pizza aisle, man. Like, no, I'm just a guy like you.
Like, you know, I have a theory about why nice people play such great villains. And it's because really nice people are very genuine. And when a villain, you know, like a good villain doesn't go, I'm coming at you, you know.
Right.
The fact that you're sincere and authentic, and then you just put fucked up words in your mouth.
That's all it takes. Yeah,
it creates a dissonance where you're like, you just feel really uncomfortable. And I think that that gives a villain depth or a kind of a weird.
And the most dangerous, the best bad guys think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That's what makes them dangerous.
Yeah.
They fully believe in their cause.
Do you like playing villains or do you? Because I just saw it. Well, I just saw a movie that you were not a villain in. My wife does a lot of hosting stuff at Screamfest.
Yeah.
And this movie, Discarnate, played. We saw it, but you were great in it. And they
I still haven't seen it.
And the director, or was it the director? Someone, no, your Costa, the guy who played your brother
in
the thing.
Matt Monroe. Yeah.
Matt Monroe said, Chris and I didn't really know what we were supposed to do, so we just kind of like improvised a backstory, and it stayed in,
and like,
and it totally made sense.
I read a review where they're like, and somebody was like, one of my favorite moments. There's a scene where they're talking about their childhood. I wish there would have been more of that. And I called Matt. I was like, believe that shit, because I remember us doing that, and then being like, maybe don't improv. but you know, you never know what's going to work.
Come on,
exactly. And one of the only, although more recently with The Deuce and The Front Runner that's out now, I'm not bad guys in those, but most of my career certainly has been villains. And because, I really enjoy that, mainly because what we were speaking on earlier, that I think a lot of times people read bad guy and they think like, oh, I need to play him bad.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's easier than that. Read the words are bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, just be a human being that's saying these horrible things.
Yeah, you don't have to telegraph it, just because people, you know, in life, you don't get like monologues from
villains. Yeah, right. Right.
If someone's gonna fuck you up, they're just gonna fuck you up.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, they might just very calmly say, like, hey, well,
I was just gonna say, and the calmer they do it, the scarier
the
that shit is.
The scarier it
it's
is.
It's like, oh, this isn't bullshit. This guy is enjoying himself.
He's way too confident about this. He's way too comfortable with all of this.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then one of the first time I think that I ever played a good guy was with Lydia. It ended up being called The Barber, but it initially was called Trigger.
Yeah.
And I played the lead. He was a detective who went undercover trying to capture this serial killer. And your wife played one of the supporting characters.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Just random coincidence, but
that is crazy. She's upstairs. I'm gonna text her now to come down and say hi. Say hi to Chris Coy before you leave.
And I'll be nicer this time. In the movie, I wasn't very nice to her.
You know, my wife has a great. She's almost becoming like the Sean Bean of, like. She dies horribly in everything. She
survived our interaction.
She did survive your, but there's so many things where it's just like heroin addicts, you know, skull crushed, thrown into a vat of acid.
Those are the most fun roles, though.
She loves it.
Those are good times.
She absolutely loves that part of it.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's like, you're like, oh yeah, I'm dying this one too. I'm like, you got to, now it's a streak.
Right.
Now you got to keep that going.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, how many things can you get that you die in? But the Front Runner looks great.
Thanks.
I didn't know that I would be interested in the story of Gary Hart. You know, because I was in high school at the time, so I was vaguely aware.
Yeah, true.
In a pre-social media era, and that was just all adult shit. And
right.
You know, I was watching Monty Python.
That was my experience too.
Yeah. Yep. So, what is it? who do you play in the movie, and then and what was your experience on the film?
So I play a guy named Kevin Sweeney, who's a real guy, still alive and well, a guy much, much more intelligent than I. and he was Gary Hart's press secretary. He's a young gun, again, really sharp. He's 28 years old when he was Gary Hart's press secretary on his presidential campaign. He's the best kind of guy. He believed wholeheartedly in his candidate and that he was the right man for the job and that he could do the best work for this country. And the rug just got pulled out from under him the peak of positivity in that campaign. Almost the moment where he was like, you know what, maybe I can relax. I think we're gonna win this.
Oh, no.
And then he just like gets a call from the Washington Post. They actually called Kevin Sweeney first and was like, this is the story we have and we're running it.
Oh my God.
He's like, there's a moment in the movie actually where he's like, uh-huh. And he just like grabs a bottle of scotch. And he's like, uh-huh. You're going to do what? And he like sniffs the bottle first. Like, he's just like, it's 2 a.m. and you're telling me that everything's imploded.
Did you talk to Kevin Sweeney?
Yeah. Yes. Extremely informative, I think excited that the story was going to be told. I'm sure that he, as well as the rest of them, were hesitant too. I think it's got to be scary to hear that like a movie's being made based on, even if it's just a moment in your life,
right?
But like based on your truth, and you know, especially when it's being made by somebody like Jason Reitman. So, like, chances are people are going to see it.
Right.
Just amplifies that sort of fear or the unknown. But he was really committed to the project and wanted to be a part of it and be as informative as possible and help me get it right. Such a nice guy. Like I said, I'm endlessly sort of humbled to be able to play him because just when I started researching what the job was and what it entailed, I was like, oh, I could never do this for a living. And then once I spoke to Kevin, I was like, oh, I could never do a lot of things that guy could do.
Right.
Like, just so smart. I played his press secretary and Kevin Sweeney, really, I mean, if anybody almost sort of saved him, almost was able to kind of patch this up, it was probably Kevin. Ultimately that it didn't work out. But just a guy who he fought the good fight to the end and for at least in his mind, all the right reasons. And like you said, just really believed that Hart was the right man for the job and that we were about to like lose our best chance, but maybe for good reason. But it's a tough story. I think that's why it's a good film. I think good movies, like my mother drove quite a lot of miles. She doesn't live in New York or L.A., and she went to go see the movie already.
Oh,
I haven't even seen it in limited release. And she was like, I mean, I love you in the movie, but didn't make me feel good. I was like,
not every movie does.
Yeah, and it should be that you leave thinking. And
right.
That, you know, it asks questions. Jason sort of keenly put that, like, I'm not answering many questions. I'm asking them. I'm asking you to ask them. And I think that's a bold move as a filmmaker to be like, I'm trusting you, the audience, to understand that, like, I'm not laying it out for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, these are the things I'm wondering. How do you feel about this?
Right, right. And, well, especially when you're basing it on a, you know, life is very complicated and there are not, you know, it's sort of been the theme of the conversation so far is, like, there's not a ton of answers to things.
Right.
And it's like, well, things happen and then you just sort of wade your way through it.
That's
and
right.
Do the and best you can.
Right, exactly.
You know? Like,
yeah, I don't know what's around this corner, but there's no other route. So, like, let's find out, I guess. We'll just keep going and see where we end up. And I think a lot of us are in that holding pattern.
I saw a what was it on? It was one of the subreddits I follow. It might have been Get Motivated. Just a good subreddit. Get motivated.
Yeah, you need a little more motivation, Chris. You're always sitting on your ass.
I know. Oh, God. I'll do 20 things tomorrow.
Yeah. But you guys know he's in his pajamas right now.
Oh, my God. I should have done that. I should start doing that. That's a great idea, actually, because
it's a power move, too. If I would have shown up and, like, trying to be Hollywood cool, and you open the door just in your silk PJs. Yeah.
Guys, right over there. We'll just record right over there. Yeah, there's the sort of the difference between, like, some people who go, wow, that guy's free, versus, like, what the fuck? Why? Come on. Just put on pants. Put on pants. So it might have been either get motivated or, no, it was, let's see, it was either get motivated, our self-improvement, or our stoicism. But it was just as real. Which are very all related.
They're all
interrelated.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a panel from one of the Kung Fu Panda movies, and his master is telling him, he says, yesterday is history, tomorrow's a mystery, today is a gift. That's why it's called present.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, it's fucking, that's exactly what I needed to hear today.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly what I needed to
hear. All of the wisest things that my kids know don't come from me. They come from movies like Kung Fu Panda and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because they need to distill all that information down into the most digestible.
And the truth is that, like, those are all the things that now as an adult I'm sort of rediscovering and finding that those are all the things that I need to hear too.
Of course.
You know,
like, it never stops. Like, you don't get to a point where you're like, yep, like, I figured it all out.
Or, which is like something I think that as kids, I thought like, oh, they're adults and they know it all, or they've got it figured out and I don't. And then you become a parent and you realize, like, no, I still feel like a 14-year-old boy.
Of course. You feel like however you felt right about the time that puberty kicked in. That's when your identity sort of solidifies. But this, I sort of had this mind-blowing thought. Well, mind-blowing to me. I don't know. Maybe no one else will give a shit. But mind-blowing in the sense that when you think about the values that you had when you were a kid, and they still seem you still understand them and they seem real. Like you said, when I saw my parents, I thought they knew everything. Most of the time we forget that our brains weren't fully formed and that we are still holding on to things from a point of view that was essentially not at full capacity.
Yeah, a work in progress.
It was a work in progress.
As we still are.
Yes, exactly. And so it's, yes, things when you're a kid, you need things to be very binary because you're not necessarily processing a lot of these higher...
That's right. Like we were saying earlier... Not full transparency.
That's right.
You know,
not full transparency.
Because there's too many working parts going on right there. And yeah, like you said, it's pretty important to be binary.
So how long should we allow ourselves to be prisoners of a being that didn't have you know what I mean? It'd sort of like be getting mad at your old Palm Pilot for not being able to go on the internet.
It's like it didn't have
they the didn't capacity. Have that yet.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to understand.
And now we might be an iPhone 10, but 20 years from now, that's still a Palm Pilot. You know?
Now we're just talking to Gen Z and millennials.
Yeah, true. How you doing,
using
guys?
Using terminology. So it's like when you're Switch, when you take off the Joy-Cons and then you
I love the Switch, though.
It's great.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
I've been playing Diablo 3 for the past week.
Oh, so good.
I just need Red Dead Redemption to come to the Switch so that
Are you on Red Dead 2?
No, and
I had a 20-minute conversation sitting in traffic on the way here. Serious conversation about how to rob the sheriff's department in a town in Red Dead 2.
The whole B story in South Park last week was how everyone was, and it just casually floated into every conversation. Like, they summon the devil, and he references something in Red Dead, and they go, are you playing Red Dead Redemption 2? And he's like, yeah, it's awesome. Like, everyone's fucking
it's
playing.
It's true, man.
But I just, sitting in front, like, I like the convenience of being it, and I move around so much.
Right, yeah, of course.
That it's just been easier to play it
My 6-year-old's confiscated my Switch to a very large degree.
What?
Yeah. She just beats the shit out of Mario Odyssey.
Oh,
and
I played that. It's fucking great.
It's so good. And then I just gave her own account on Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Nice.
And she's like, you know, sword play and stuff like that. And I just sit there like, I'm so fucking proud of you.
But Daddy's going to have to get his own Switch.
Yeah, exactly.
For Christmas, Daddy's going to have to get his own Switch.
I have made a grave mistake.
I'm going to put one in your stocking for Christmas, but it's really Daddy's.
It's for me.
It's totally just for me.
Exactly.
But, you know, not, again, like not.
God, it's funny. So far, this, Red Dead just took us on such well, a.
Yeah, but I just spent this whole, like everything we talked about before, this was like not being enslaved by your childhood self. And now we're like, we need to play the Switch and we need to play my video games everywhere again.
Well, but it does speak to the idea that like, it doesn't matter, like. You're 14 and you're like, one day, you know, I mean, you're whatever. It's like, one day I'll be a man, or just one day I'll be a grown-up and I'll have it figured out. And then, like, now I'm 32 and I'm still like, one day I'll be a man.
Yeah.
Or one day I'll have this figured out.
Yeah.
And it's like, that just goes on and it just, that'll never end.
It never ends. And even when you figure something out,
right,
and you have like an aha moment, you still, you know, we're still such habitual creatures and creatures of pattern that you constantly have to remind yourself, especially if you're trying to change, to have better habits or whatever. You will never have to stop reminding yourself. And I think, well, on the one hand, that sounds oppressive, but it's like, well, you brush your teeth twice a day, or you should, and you don't really think about it.
Right.
So it's not like you go, like, if you really thought, like, would I have to brush my teeth twice a day, every day for the rest of my life?
If you added those numbers
up. Yeah, like, how many thousands of times, right, you know?
Exactly.
And it's just sort of the same thing with habit and anything personality-wise. Like, yeah, you know, like, yeah, or fitness, whatever it is.
Life. You take it a day at a time.
You take it a day at a time. It's like, well, you get through whatever you can get through in a day.
Right. That's right. And, like, I think there's some peace to be found in the idea that we're just Palm Pilots.
We're Palm Pilots and like, in an iPhone 10 world.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
The idea that, like, we don't have this shit figured out yet.
No, we don't.
And maybe we don't even have the system or the processor
yet.
Hard
drive that could store the information figure it out.
Exactly. So forgive yourself.
Forgive yourself. Forgive yourselves out there, Palm Pilots.
Yeah.
How many people have said, how many people in the world today do you think have said the phrase Palm Pilot? Probably not a lot.
No. Especially just like even like my cousin's kids, that generation, like in their 20s, they don't know what a Palm Pilot is.
No, they don't at all. They don't even remember like when, I mean, well, I'm a little bit older than you, but I remember when Palm Pilots before, hey, Lydia Hurst has come in to say hi to Chris Coy.
Hey. How are you? Yeah, last good. Time I saw you, weren't you strangling me today?
I believe so. Yeah, we were just talking about. We've both been on the wrong side of that before, yeah. So it's okay.
We were talking about.
I'm gonna die later today. Too.
Yeah, see,
really?
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah, she's going to work on a thing where she dies again. I was saying like you can't break your death streak in the.
I know this isn't even a horror movie. This is like a really serious drama, I still have found a way to die.
Heroin overdose, right?
OD. Mm-hmm. Nice. How many times have you OD'd, Lydia?
Just.
She actually, last week she was in this weird situation where she was like, I'm supposed to die of a heroin overdose and I don't know how to tie off my arm, but I don't want to look it up because I don't want that in my search history.
It's true. Again, Palm Pilot problems.
Palm
we
Pilot
just
problems,
don't know
yeah.
What we're
we
doing
do,
yet.
Yeah, we don't know exactly how we're doing.
Well, so good to see you.
Have to teach me when I get to set.
Well, just, yeah. You know, just tie off the best you can, sweetie. Right. I'll still love you. Trying. You're going to get an A for effort and an H for heroin.
I am dead.
Either way, you're going to die. It's going to be fine.
Yes.
You guys are just the sweetest.
I mean, get out of here. All right. Ma.
I
want
to take
good to see you.
No worries.
Yeah.
I love you. Bye.
Have fun today. What a bizarre world we live in.
It's so
yeah,
surreal.
Yeah.
It's so surreal. But I remember when Palm Pilots were, like, everyone was crazy about the organizers.
Right.
And we had, you know, like a giant, thick organizer with as many, like, this is a diary. These are contacts.
That's right.
These are, like... And you like, only could fit so many contacts in.
Right.
So
I still, when I go, like, I go home, I grew up in my grandparents' house. I go home, my grandmother still, if she's got to call anybody, she pulls out this, like, Bible thick.
That's what works for her.
Thing that, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because in her mind, the ability, you know, like, trying, like, having to adopt a new paradigm.
Right.
It just takes a lot of energy.
That's right.
It just, in the last maybe year or two of my dad's life, he finally was like, before he would never text. He would never text or email. He's like, if you want to talk, just call me.
Yeah.
Then he discovered texting and then, you know, and then it was texting. And then he started discovering LOLs and shorthands. And then that became
a
thing.
Which is bizarre because I have that feeling now. My mom does that stuff now.
And it's
a little
weird.
If I get an LOL from her, I'm like...
Did you laugh out loud, Mom? Did you really?
No. Yeah. You caught me.
But I wonder if our like what our technological fences threshold will be.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it going to be VR, right, or AR or something?
Right. Because it's all relative. Like, we're Palm Pilots. Our parents are address books or whatever, you know, like. And then
Palm Pilot sounds, by the way, like a bad euphemism for being hyper masturbatory. This guy's a fucking Palm Pilot.
This guy's supposed to be flying the plane.
It's up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Palm co-pilot. Like, I help out. I work the balls.
Yeah. I'm a circle jerk kind of guy. Okay. You want to just fly the plane, Chris?
I mean, you know what? At this point, I feel like I've earned it. Yeah. I've put in enough flight hours. Right. Feel like maybe I could pilot this bird.
That's amazing. I have found a little bit that, like, just as far as, you know, generationally, like, what's your threshold for growth or, like, acceptance of the new technology or whatever? I have sort of reached my point where I'm like, this is as far as I'm willing to go style-wise, clothing-wise.
Right.
I've, like, reached my peak. I'm not interested in, like, whatever the new, like, all the people dyeing their hair purple.
Right.
Or whatever. And, like, even saying that right now, I'm like, I sound like my grandma. I'm like... I've decided, like, I'm a jeans and t-shirt guy, and that's where I'm going to be.
Yep.
And I feel like going into auditions and stuff, I'm just seeing, and see, I'm so blind to it, I can't even come up with an example. But, like, I go into auditions and see other guys my age or younger, and they're, like, you know, just, like, their jacket sleeves are rolled all the way up or some weird shit. And I'm like, I don't know what that is, and I'm not interested.
Why are they? Why don't you just wear a jacket?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a jacket, or you could take it off and it's a shirt.
I mean, do you want to just wear a short sleeve shirt?
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, just and then when they want to explain it to me, I'm like, I don't want to know. And that's like,
it's, you know,
like,
you know what we need to do? We need to, because I know that these are marketed for women, but the short sleeve jacket is something that men really need to figure out. You know, it's a little, like, we need to take it so that it's a little less blousy and really just a good fucking leather distressed short sleeve jacket.
Right.
Are you listening, All Saints?
Damn it.
You have 1,000 old sewing machines in your fucking windows. You can make one goddamn short sleeve jacket for a guy to try at some point. But you say you wear a t-shirt and jeans, but this is a nice fashion-y t-shirt. Like, it's a cool... Oh. It's got, like, Chris, buttons on it. There's no collar.
My wife dressed me.
It's a Should I put that on?
Yes.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Oh, I don't even ask. She just comes in and hands it to me. She's like, "This is what you're wearing."
She hands it to you while your daughter's playing your Switch.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
Someone just put food in my bed.
I have no control over my life.
Doing. Yeah. But this is a good. What you're wearing is the perfect, I think, audition uniform, because it looks good.
But it's simple and
non-distracting. But it's simple enough and it's not distracting, so that they can sort of imagine you. That's true. You're sort of like a blank – you can be like a blank canvas.
That's right.
Like, you can imagine me into anything.
That's so exactly right. I think that – like important. People don't think about that. They like think like – oh, this character would wear, like, a shirt that says, "Go fuck yourself." But, like, in reality, even if that's true, don't wear that shirt.
Like, yeah. I mean, I always wonder, it's like, when I did audition for scripted stuff, I would always get caught in this weird, like, well, the character is a cowboy. And, like, they have really specific things about him. And I'm like... Right. Now, I know there are some people that are going to go in dressed as a cowboy. Those people are probably not going to get the part.
Right.
But do I just do a hint of it? It's like...
Right. Which I think is right. I think, like, yeah, like, you do, like, a little bit. You do something that's like, hey, I'm game.
Right.
But I'm not crazy.
Or... it's like... if somebody comes in full regalia, then that basically just says, like, you're going to be a little extra work.
Yeah, do I want to work with that?
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, every single day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I get, you know, because we have wardrobe people that could get you of that. You don't to, you don't have to, you don't necessarily have to do that.
Right.
Well, what do actors do? Because when I moved out here in 88, and
I was 2 years old.
2 years
everybody.
Old. Everybody. Oh, that hurts. Oh, God, that hurts. Just a second wave of it just sort of came through. But, you know, there were the actors who were like having the business card with the headshots on and everything. Right. It's like, so in a digital age, what are those like super motivated, maybe slightly too intense actory types do now?
Yeah, they're like mass emailing.
Yeah, is it mass emailing still?
So.
Or is it like,
so.
What are we...
Or like, it's like every now and then I'll see, not going to name any names, even though I'm very tempted to do so. some actors on social will post like what audition they just had as though like that's going to help them get it. Or they're like, you know... This is what I did today, and it was great. And I'm this guy, and I want this, and all this. And it's like maybe be quieter.
You know what? This is all going to loop around again, Chris Coy, because
love it.
In just sort of hearing what you're saying like that, ultimately, what because the entertainment, the world, especially as we've seen, the world is uncontrollable, and we create the illusion of control and certainty.
Yeah, right.
And so to when you work in a creative field, it's so difficult to know how you're doing.
Yeah.
And so we apply these artificial metrics,
like
posting on social media. Oh, how many likes did I get? How many of this?
Exactly.
How many of that?
Validation.
Because I'm just trying to get some sort of sense.
Right.
But if you release the idea that anything is 100% certain, then it does free you from that stuff. You're like, well, it doesn't fucking
and I find
matter
that,
anyway.
Right. I find that you'll find more success. You'll book more jobs, or at least in my own experience, I can only speak to that. But the times where I release, where I let go, where I leave it all in the room and then really actually subscribe to like walking away from it. And if they want me, they'll call. And if not, what's next?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. My friend Jack Plotnick, who Lydia just did a show with, has a great blog that's all about, he calls it your inner vulture. Mm-hmm. And it's the thing that basically attacks you. It's like your own, it's your own mind that sort of attacks you. And it's sort of like, and it tries to, so he calls it your vulture. And you're sort of releasing that. You're like releasing your need. When you release your need for something, that's where you get, and it's not the confidence that's like this really obnoxious, like, yeah, I'm so awesome. But it's just, it's just sort of like when you don't need stuff, you're just more comfortable in your skin.
Yeah.
And when you need stuff, that's where desperation comes from. And that kind of repels things in the world.
That's true. I think that like that. That energy or whatever that is, that's real and is an obstacle, is your enemy. That's great though, your vulture. It is what it is. Like,
if you don't
feeds on you.
If you don't need anything, nothing can hurt you. Now I know that that's a very binary way to think about things, because obviously we do need things and we need to survive.
Yeah.
There's things we need.
And even though you might feel like you need that job, it's more just like trying to operate as though you don't. Trying to like convince yourself, like, I'm okay.
Well,
without
this. Yeah,
like,
not only are you okay without it, but you know, not just, you know, there's a lot of different ways to be okay. There's financially, there's sort of, you know, whatever, sort of spiritually, philosophically. But as much as you can, if you're okay, if you can figure out how to be okay with yourself
or what's coming,
that you can handle whatever's coming, you know, that you have the ability within yourself to do that, then it does release you of that kind of like, I just need people to like me.
Right.
I just need, because I need for me. It's like, you're giving the world too much power over yourself.
True, man.
And you don't need to do that.
I fully subscribe to that.
And you just, as someone who, you know, just fled what is a hellscape right now, you that was very much held up to you in front of your face to see like, oh yeah, like we don't, I guess I don't need any of this stuff. I just need my family.
Right.
And, you know, like, we can pack everything into one car and we'll be okay no matter what.
That's
it sucks, but we'll be okay.
That's right. It's a crazy, crazy thing. But, again, like, once you sort of release that vulture, I love that, man. I'm stealing that.
Yeah, it's Jack Plotnick. I think it's just jackplotnick.com if you just go to his site. He just has a whole, you know, he's just a really great guy. And
he's
just such a great attitude about all of it.
Right. Because when we were there and we were in it, it was like scary and you feel the pressure of everything and like, what's the right thing to do right now? The moment we got in the car and left, happy again.
Right.
This is all, we are what matters, and we'll come back if there's something to come back to.
Right.
And if not. the next adventure begins.
Because, you know, this is an interesting time for you because you're working on so many different cool things and you have worked on so many cool things that you are definitely, at least from an outsider's perspective, on a major upswing in your career. Like, things seem like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, this guy's... Mm-hmm. And you have one of those faces where people see you, they go, oh, yeah, I like that guy. I know that. I know who that guy is. He's got a cool vibe.
Or they're like, that guy chokes babies.
That guy chokes babies. But I still like him for some reason. He eats people and he chokes babies.
Thanks.
But I just want to hang out with him. I don't know. I'm not a baby. He's not going to choke me.
Yeah, true. I'm not- true.
So as long as I'm not a baby,
I've only offended like the only group that I don't really. Yeah. There's not a real possibility of hanging out with a bunch of babies
they're
anyway.
Not listening. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. The babies.
True.
Yeah,
true.
They're not listening. As you experience, you know, more and more of the, you know, the success that I assume that you've set out to achieve, you know, you're going to have to remember that stuff. But I think that
I was just going to say that even that, whether it's the upswing or the downswing, either way, most of it's in your head.
It is.
And like, you should, I try and remind myself to stay somewhere in the middle mentally. And the idea that like, it doesn't matter how far this swings up, you just continue to work hard and love what I do and leave it in the room or value the things that matter.
Yeah. Again, most of it is in your head. And again, most
not
of
that
it-
I don't fuck that up sometimes. You know, wake up some mornings like a total asshole. My wife's like, I will kill you. And I'm like, oh, that's right. You're the boss.
Also, put this on.
Yeah, put this on before you. Exactly.
But again, you know, it's like these are things that are in our head. And a lot of them are in our head because of things that we put there when we were kids, when our brains were palm pilots.
That's right.
So, like, you know, like it's not, that's right. You got to kind of remember that it's, right, yeah. most of it's not real. And I really honestly think that if you have the ability to say that, you know, no matter what happens in the outside world today, I'm going to be okay. If you can, you know, even if you're lying to yourself.
Fake it till you make it.
That's where true human power lies because, right. You know, like we are adaptable creatures. We figure shit out. That's why that's why we've evolved. And, you know, and I believe strongly that's a lot of the key. Like, you know, if you put too much emphasis on the external world for your validation, it's just too mercurial. Like, you don't know. You can't predict how that's
right.
going to go.
And the idea that if you believe that, like, whatever comes, I can handle this, and you, like, maintain a positive core, like, I'm going to be a good person, I'm going to be as honest as possible, I'm going to treat people the way that I want to be treated, and then I'm going to work my ass off.
Right.
Then, like, you can pretty much handle whatever. And, like, chances are, like you said, if you release your vulture and hold on to that core...
That's right.
You're going to do well.
Yeah.
Right.
So what else are you working on now? Because I know you're in the Deuce as well.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you're working on that's coming up that you're excited about or that you can talk about?
Yeah. So The Front Runner goes wide November 21st.
Mm-hmm.
So proud of that. Been a Reitman fan for years. And then obviously, I mean, Hugh Jackman is fucking Wolverine. And I got to hang out with him.
Did you talk to him?
I got to be next to him a lot in the film. But then also on top of that, he's such a nice guy. And he really, he comes down from up on Wolverine Mountain and mm-hmm. hangs out with us as though he's, you know... I mean, he is. He's just he's such a regular dude and the nicest guy. He would go out with all of us on the weekends and stuff. And like every 10 seconds, somebody's coming up to take a picture and he's in mid-conversation. Oh, hi. Yeah. Smile. Picture. Thanks. Good to see you. Back to the conversation with you. And you're like, wow, man, you just are such a pro.
He's also taller than you think he's going to be.
Yeah. He's easily like 6'2".
Yeah.
And just like... Like God was like, and you will be a movie star.
Yeah, he's exactly.
Just like
exactly.
Tall, dark, handsome, talented, hard worker. Day one, knew everybody, cast and crew's name by face. Like walk up to you, never met you before. He's like, Chris, good to see you, man. And he walks away, and you're like, my fucking name.
Take it down a notch.
Yeah, exactly. Really, there are moments where all of us on the cast have a variation of this same story, where it's like you'd be sitting there talking to him and totally forget who and what he is. And again, you know, maybe because he realizes that like, that's all in his head and your head.
Right.
And then you'd sort of like catch yourself and be like, oh shit, what have I said? What have I said to Wolverine?
What did I say to you? What did I say to Hugh fucking Jackman? Like, did any fandom sneak out, or did you keep it in check?
No. I was like, bro, I've wanted to be you my whole life.
We're just going to have this conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know it's coming.
Yeah, exactly. Which he was just so gentle about and nice and sweet. And like, more than that, I mean, he opened it up for all of us to ask him anything. You know, he's aware that he's had a tremendous amount of experience living the so-called dream, where he's done what we're after, you know, a lot of us, especially nerds like me. Like, I want what he's done.
In Wolverine Origin Stories, how did Deadpool have katanas in his arms come out? Because he would have to just straighten his arms the entire time.
Exactly. Which he's got an answer for.
He does.
Because he's been asked that 1,000 times. What you realize in talking to him is that, like, all us nerds are the same person.
He knows.
And he knows it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He can sniff it out.
That's
he might
right.
be able to, for a second, to be like, so you're Hugh? Oh, it's nice to meet you. You know, like, you might be able to fake it for a second.
Yeah.
What's your last name? Right. Jackman. Hugh Jackman. Nice to meet you.
He sees right through that.
Yeah, he's like, come on, I know. All right, good. Well, as long as we both know.
Exactly.
And,
right.
You know, it's all going to be fine. I mean, that is an interesting, I mean, I get it all nets out good, but to be a character that is that identifiable. You know, I mean, that is, you know, like one of the best things that could happen in your career, but I can understand how it could also be perceived as like, oh, that's Wolverine. You know, I mean, he does other stuff.
And so well.
Yeah, so well.
He's a character actor.
And a singer and a dancer.
Exactly.
And
he's just built for this stuff.
Would you want to be an iconic character, like that iconic of a character, in something, in a series of things, or would you rather sort of be able to?
Yes. Yes, I would.
You know, think about it.
I don't want to think about it.
I'll fucking
right
now.
Right now. Yeah. Right now. Whatever comes, let's go.
Because there are some actors that I think are probably like, no, I want to be able to be invisible and blend in. And
yeah, I want that too.
Yeah, you
but
want
I,
both of those
But
things.
I also want to be Wolverine.
did you have a Halloween costume this year?
Yes. The kids decided this year. We were all Day of the Dead skeletons.
Oh my God, that's
like
awesome.
A family of dead people.
That's really fantastic.
It was fun. Yeah, it was cool.
I like the sort of lack of democracy in your house.
I don't get to decide
it's
anything.
Very sweet though. You're like,
there are votes happening. I just don't get to be involved.
My wife wanted this.
Yeah.
Is your 3-year old? What's the story with your 3-year old?
She's the meanest of the group. just the will on that one, man. Dylan, surname. Hi, Dylan. She's the stinker. She's just the strongest of all of us, probably, is the story on that.
I think that's, you know, the fact that, because you had kids relative, well, I guess not young,
25.
But 25.
Yeah.
I think that's also great because that kind of helps ground you too.
Yeah.
It's
it changed everything for me. I was maybe aimless prior. And then, yeah, exactly. It just grounds you. It made me like, all of a sudden it's bigger than me. And it didn't matter anymore that I would, maybe I'll prep this or maybe I'll go have a couple drinks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you'll prep it while you're having a couple drinks.
That's right.
At the very least. Like,
that's what I mean. But that's what's great. That's sort of the, you know, I think having that sort of creates the larger kind of humility for being in the world, in the universe. And
that's
it's just
right.
like,
that's right.
You know, we're here for a blink and you sort of, it's about the process.
Right.
Do what
and
you can.
Yeah, exactly. No matter what scale I'm looking at it on, it's not up to me.
No.
Like,
the only thing that's up to you is how you, it's
how
like,
I'm going to approach it.
How you approach it, the values that you have, you know,
yep.
How you treat other people. Like, that's all the stuff that's up to you and nothing else is up to you.
Yeah. And I think that like the sooner that you recognize, accept, and embrace that idea, like, or at least with me, like, the moment I let it all go and was like, all I can do is control the type of person that I am,
mm-hmm.
life got easier.
Are you, do you have a lot of auditions on a daily basis, or does it come seasonally, or like, what does your week look like?
Yeah, normally? More recently, just because of, you know, The Deuce, which like, so humbled being in that show. Like, it's just, those guys just write such tremendous stories. And, but being on that, we shoot a long season. It's a 7-month long season.
Oh,
in New York City. And, it's like three week episodes. It's like shooting 10 movies in a row.
Walking Dead wasn't even 3 weeks an episode. No. Walking Dead was like 8 days an episode.
Yeah, no, we're like, 13 shooting days per ep, one prep day, or one off day,
and
then
one prep
day.
That's fucking incredible that a zombie show takes 8 days and a 70s porn show is 3 weeks per
episode. That's right, man. That's right. Just, we're going to shoot the shit out of this. You know? Yeah. Exactly. And so, because of that, and then obviously getting lucky enough to be in the front runner for Jason. And then I also did another movie, which is coming out here in a couple of months, I think, called Trial by Fire, that Ed Zwick directed.
Oh, wow.
Laura Dern, Jack O'Connell, Emily Mead from The Deuce,
yep.
and myself. Had that one up. And all of those things have kept me busy and sort of afforded me a little more time in between, and the opportunity to be a little pickier with stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I'm still very much like working class actor. I turn down nothing almost, you know, like I want to do great work, but I also need to work, need to
yeah.
put food on the table, need to all that stuff.
Yeah.
Which like maybe one day that won't be the case, but again, dude, I value this time. It's pretty exhilarating. I love that the pressure's still on, and, that, like we said earlier, you know, once you have those kids, it's like, it's not really about me anymore. Like, how do I build the best life for them possible? And that makes the work like that much more fulfilling. I still get to be creative and do what I love, but I have this like amplified pressure.
Right.
And it's like, oh no, you're going to run as fast as you fucking can right now for them. And that's cool.
Yeah. Because you know, when you go home, your daughter's going to be on your Switch.
Yeah, and exactly. And you're going to have no say in anything.
Well, you're going to have to – you should get – this is why you need to get your own Switch, so you can like network – like you can play multiplayer.
That's what – yeah. Santa's bringing me a Switch.
Good. Yeah,
absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. And I want to clarify, just so I don't get my ass beat when I get home, that things work way better with me not being the one calling the shots. my wife crushes it.
I know. I think I lean a little too much on my wife.
Yeah, me too.
Because I've noticed that I do start to do these things like when there's, you know, like, I don't know, if there's just like little things go wrong around here, I kind of do, and it's unfortunate that she's just so capable.
Yeah,
right. Which is kind of her curse.
I can't even send a text. I have to. I'm like, she has to proofread it for me.
I do,
and be like, nah, don't do, you know, or whatever. And
I've concocted this performance that she's catching on to, which is this sort of, it's like, it's a stalling tactic. But really, it's like, when are you going to solve this? You know, it's like, oh, what are we going to do about this?
And you're not even really thinking about what an answer or solution is.
If you just kind of got through the facade, like my brain is sort of like a backlot at Universal. It's like the facade is detailed.
But then you get in there, it's just a bunch of empty buildings.
Yeah, there's just like you see the slats of wood holding it up, yeah, exactly. And it's like an old car battery. And right. Someone's like discarded McDonald's wrappers.
Exactly.
There's really nothing that's going on back there.
She's gonna come in here and she's gonna fix
she'll figure
all
this out. Yeah,
she's gonna figure
she's
it
like,
out.
Okay, we should do this.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's great. Are you sure? Well, do you want?
You are. You're just an actor, and she's the director. You're just waiting for her to tell you where to stand, what to say, and how to say
it. I mean, really, do you want me to do this is colloquially, when are you going to do this? You know what I mean? It's like, you want me to do this, or do you, you know? Like,
yeah.
Fine, I'll do it. Well, okay. I mean, it's a whole...
That's the best... I think that we've really figured out the best way to behave.
But the thing, the funny part about it is that she knows what I'm doing.
Of course they know.
It's not... I'm not...
You're not getting away with anything.
No, it's the same as you're just it to happen.
I'm just my wife's third child.
And there's another one.
I'm just you're her third. She's got three Palm Pilots in her
purse.
She's
got three Palm Pilots.
One of them's the big one
that can drive.
Yeah, exactly. Barely.
And that's kind of your main usefulness.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're able to drive and acquire right, things, and then right, and then come right home. Well, I'm so glad that you're all okay, and thanks, I'm so man glad that you know,
you guys too. It was right here, man. Too, it didn't it come and kind of land in Griffith Park?
Yeah, we had one. We had there was one in Griffith Park. Yeah. But we've had a couple this season, this fire season. But which is strange that that's a thing. But that's this it fire is season.
Yeah.
We've been really lucky. But we always know, you know, like right around October, November, I kind of like heavy sigh, like breathe, like, okay, the fire, you know,
yep.
But every season when it gets hot and the Santa Anas come in and you don't know, and you know, you'll go through Griffith Park and you see people fucking flicking cigarettes. You're like, what the, that should be such a criminal offense.
I know. It's unbelievable.
Because you, like one cigarette can right destroy well, an like entire this community.
I'm pretty sure they think that's what happened because the Hill Fire happened close enough, started close enough to the 101 to where either arson or just like somebody flicking a cigarette on the way down the road.
Well, again, we can't control the horrible things that happen in the world. You can't control the good things or the bad. You can't control anything.
Yeah.
But you can control yourself and appreciate the moment.
Right.
And, you know, again, not to trivialize. There are horrible, horrible things that are going on. But, you know, what's the alternative? The alternative is you ball yourself up at home and go, I'm never leaving the house. And then you're not living.
Right, exactly.
You know, you don't want to not live and then you die. You right want
to
live.
That's right. So. Yeah. And if we were all looking inward and making sure to work on ourselves properly or whatever, then that's like, that's mass progress. That's like,
but don't punish yourself for being a Palm Pilot. We are limited, dumb creatures.
That's right. That's right.
And that's just, all. That's the best we can
just
do.
Just take your stylus out and do what you can. Actually, no, don't take your stylus out.
Don't take your stylus out. Yeah. Just poke it with the tip of your tip of your finger.
Exactly.
Thank you for being here.
No, dude, thanks, man. This is so much fun.
Absolute pleasure.
Likewise.
Enjoy your burrito. And get rid of your vulture.
That's right.
Your vulture's eating your burrito.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.